Welcome back to the Fastest Known Podcast. I am the esteemed sound engineer, Craig Randall. I'm here with our usual host, Buzz Burrell. Buzz, how's it going?
Good to talk with you, Craig. And indeed, the esteemed sound engineer is a valuable person. You clean up the audio tracks every single week. Thank you for doing that.
No problem. Well, we're back today in a bit of a friends discussion about how COVID-19 is, where we're at with it, how we're all dealing with it as athletes and runners. And I personally want to look back a little bit because I find the flow of information around this is fascinating. If you rewind to, you know, as little as a month ago and what we knew and how we were responding versus the information we have now and how we're responding. So I'm looking forward to talking to you about that. But how do you want to start, Buzz?
Yeah, that's a good point. Things have changed dramatically. Mm-hmm. Well, first, we want to say that the Fastest Known Podcast has some of the best guests on ever with amazing information. And yet we're going to talk about the pandemic a little bit because everybody is anyway, aren't they? And so we might as well talk about it. And Craig, we got to finally just, you know, suck it up and acknowledge 2020 isn't going to come back. When this first came down in late February and middle of March, they're announcing 3-week stay-at-home orders, which are gradually being relaxed. But 2020 is going to look a lot different. It's possible the future for the next few years is going to look a lot different. So I think it's worth discussing this.
Right. Well, let's start off with acknowledging what you said. And I fully agree that 2020 is not the end of us discussing the coronavirus, and the future is going to change a lot. So how do you see the future changing from a societal level? And then maybe we can get more into the athletic level.
Right. Thanks, Craig. Well, first, we all have to acknowledge that it's a global pandemic. It's terrible. People are going to get sick and die. People are going to lose their jobs and businesses will be lost. So that's our starting point. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where we're coming from. And I think the initial reaction was based on fear. And fear is good. Fear works well. Like you're up on a mountain, lightning's going to strike. Boy, you're going to set a PR for getting off that mountain. But then after that, you want to stop and think about what happened or what you're going to do best. So I think that's where we're at now, Craig, is we had some initial reactions that were very appropriate. The stay-at-home orders, basically putting the entire country into a medically induced coma. That was correct action. But now it's time to take a look at where we're really at and how we can do better. And I do want to start off, before we get into how as athletes we can do better, is look at some of the science behind this and just straighten out some of the current misconceptions. Mm-hmm. And Craig, this one pertains to you because the first one that we've always hearing is this affects everyone. And it really doesn't. It's completely different. This mm-hmm. disease is very different in that young and healthy people aren't nearly as affected as older and infirm people. Mm-hmm. And yet you, of course, are treated like everybody else. And the statistics on this are dramatic. 89% of the fatalities have comorbidity conditions, have something else that was already wrong. In Colorado, 61% of the deaths are out of nursing homes. In Boulder County, there's been 47 deaths. 37% of those are in nursing homes. So right out of the gate, your generation is being made to kind of toe the line in order to keep my generation, if you will, safe.
Right. And you and I talked about this just one-on-one off the record a week or so ago. And I completely agree with you. And I think it's interesting that we have an interesting environment where we live in Boulder because we've got people who are even younger than me, people in their early 20s at the university. And they're on, a lot of them, granted, have a lot of the out-of-state students have gone home. I think they probably went home last month or even later than that or earlier than that. But now what's become kind of a hot topic around town is that if you're riding your bike up to the Flatirons or running or going to Chautauqua or whatever, and you pass the college University Hill area, there are a lot of students around and they're not social distancing. It's almost like it's summer break and they're just living it up like it was, you know, any summer break during any of our lifetimes. And the backlash in our community to their behavior has been really interesting to see. And I think it comes back to your point about certain generations are taking the brunt of consequences that may not actually exist.
Well, the consequences definitely exist, but not for them.
Right.
I mean, sorry, you have to say this, is that the, this was, came out 6 weeks ago, a long time ago. The CDC reported that the fatality rate for people between 20 and 49 was 5 out of 1,000. Mm-hmm. And that's not even factoring in comorbidity factors. So if you're a college student and you don't have other issues, you're not going to die. It's just,
right,
it's not going to happen. Now, of course, the obvious issue is you could become infected and you could spread it to other people. But then the other rejoinder is to who? Personally, yeah. I am wearing face masks. I am being very safe. I'm practicing social distancing. So if the students are doing this, honestly, it doesn't affect me. So it's kind of an interesting way to tease that out. And I want to mention at this point that if they end up going to the hospital, it will burden healthcare workers, but they don't go to the hospital. I mean, I've had this, and many friends, maybe you have too, have been infected, and they call the hospital, they call the doctor says, stay home.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to tease this out. And again, we want to note that this is a serious illness, but it does not affect people equally.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's kind of where the frustration is starting to build, and that it seems like, and I don't fault the administration or the CDC or with what the rollout was like for this
right.
a month or so ago, because no one, I mean, you make it totally apolitical and you just evaluate what's happening and you do the best that you can do. And I don't think that that you can fault the actions that were taken. But now that we have a little bit of hindsight and a lot more data, because a lot more tests have happened, it's time to give this some specificity. And I think what you're saying is, and what I think when I pass, you know, the college kids out in their yards partying at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I think that in general, the other concept that you hear a lot about is the herd immunity application. And right. I almost think, what harm is it when the lowest risk population, like 20 to 30 year olds that I'm seeing partying, if they're interacting with themselves and assuming they're not, you know, visiting their grandma and giving her a kiss hello the next day, I think that there's a lot of value to having these populations of really low risk people interacting. And it would help, I think, give us all some enlightenment if the public health officials started to acknowledge that and gave us new guidelines.
There you go, Craig. I think I really appreciate what you said, which is our emergency declarations back in March were fully appropriate. It's just like running away from a thunderstorm in the mountains. You figure it out later. You run first. But now what are we going to do? And so the second aspect that we've been hearing over and over, if not over again, is we don't want to overload the hospitals. We're not. It hasn't happened. New York City, it definitely did. They got slammed, maybe parts of New Orleans. But actually, the opposite has been a big problem. Hospital beds are empty. They're struggling financially. So it's really quite ironic. The Mayo Clinic declared a $3 billion write-down 4 weeks ago. The Boulder Community Hospital, at the peak of our infection rate here in Boulder County, they had 4 CV-19 patients in their entire hospital. Moab, of course, closed down. They shut down the national parks, the local national parks there, and public lands, closed it to camping, banned people from coming because they had a 17-bed hospital, which is empty. They're losing money. They're struggling to stay afloat. So again, it was a good call back in March, but now let's stop saying the same old things over and over again and adapt to where we're at now.
Right. Yeah. And I think you see, you know, even this week, some of the businesses that I like to go to around town are starting to reopen and you can come in and out and politely wear a mask. I haven't actually had anyone tell me to do it, but it's sort of that just sign of respect to your fellow man when you're out in public, just to, like you are when you're on a trail. It seems like that's become a pretty highly adopted practice when you're out running or hiking or doing whatever outside, is that you pull up a buff around your neck or you wear a mask or just try to give some sign of, you know, acknowledgement and respect to people passing. But at the same time, right. And I think at the same time, it's just the messages that I've been reading and hearing over the last week or more have been just about masks. And it hasn't been about anything else dealing with some of the, you know, the herd immunity aspect is something I'm really curious about. And I've heard people liken it to the only solution until there's a vaccine.
Right.
Because there is no solution with any kind of totality until a vaccine happens. But having a lot of the population exposed to the virus and have them, like you said, the statistics are really telling because very few people show signs of affectation from it.
Right.
That it's a curious practice that I think hopefully becomes more accepted. And some of the countries, European countries, have already done it. I think some of those, I think the Netherlands experimented with it, but Sweden definitely did it.
Sweden did it.
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, Germany.
Germany. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good point. So again, you're using logic, Craig. So careful there. You might, which is epidemiologists will say, you know, eventually you're going to get it. And you want to just slow down that curve so hospitals don't get overloaded, which they're not. So that's just off the table. So quit saying that. And so what you're really doing is crippling people's livelihoods in order to say, well, you're, instead of getting this in April and May, you're going to contract this in September or October. So what? I mean, what's the difference? And so like you said, if people contract it now, they develop a herd immunity, not they, but the society does, which means there's less chance of a spread because there's less vectors. And that's exactly what Sweden did. And they took a few more people getting sick and a few people dying. Again, it's old and infirm people. And so they didn't close down their economy. And here's something, if I may, just put right back out there. No one talks about collateral damage. So the metric is shocking to me. What we have is public health officers running the country and our state governments and our local governments. Now, these people are great. They do a good job. I love what they do. And they have one metric and one only: keep people from dying no matter what at any cost. There's no other consideration, which is great. Glad they're doing it. But it's sort of like asking the president of the Chamber of Commerce to run the country. Whoa, you don't really want them to do that. You want their perspective. And so I think we have to balance our perspective and take into account collateral damage, which is tremendous. It's not just people dying of coronavirus. It's people with psychiatric problems. People don't attend AA meetings. People who are victims of domestic violence. And of course, there's about 250,000 deaths due to poverty every year. And poverty is going to increase dramatically because of this. So there's collateral damage. Let's factor that into the equation in terms of how we manage this.
Well, that may be a good segue then to talk about how you acknowledge the collateral damage effects and apply that to some of the areas that we're interested in for this podcast. So we, a few weeks ago, or maybe a month ago already, you interviewed two race directors, and that was something that they were getting at. I don't think they used the word collateral damage, but they suffered collateral damage from the actions that were taken. And like you said at the beginning, it's not going to all of a sudden be, we're not going to be in the clear in a month to host races or to interact at events. You know, so how do you foresee, or what's your take on what we can expect from sanctioned events, races, the Tour de France, you and I are big fans of. We, you know, I looked at cycling pro tour schedule, and that's been recast for the fall. And it's interesting how they're handling that with the amount of races over a really short period of time. But so let's start there with events.
Yeah. Wow, Craig. Good call. Well, first, when was it? Thursday, which is like 6 days ago, the governor of Oregon canceled all events, any event, whether it's a rock concert or University of Oregon football game, which also means any race, until at least October. And she said, we cannot reopen until there is access to a vaccine or a reliable cure. So,
wow.
Quick heads up here. There's never been a vaccine for any coronavirus. Never been one. There has never been a cure for any coronavirus. So I'm not sure if she knew what she was saying, but again, we have to start with, let's readjust the misconceptions and go to some statistical facts in order to answer your question here, which is if you wait for those conditions, you're going to be waiting possibly forever. I mean, like, right. AIDS is a good example. Now there is a cure for AIDS. There is a drug for AIDS. But for 44 years, they've been working on a vaccination for HIV, and they don't have one yet. And so flu is a good example. They work like mad on flu every year. And it's usually, I checked it out, and the 2019-20 flu vaccination is coming in around, they think, 60% effective. So at 60%, it's like, you still want the vaccination, but this is no cure. So we have to go back to your question here in a more realistic way, which is, I don't know. I think that's a darn good question, isn't it? If they keep that standard, which I don't think they can do realistically because the collateral damage will just be absurd, you can't do it. So I think there's going to have to be a well-managed, tapered reopening under certain conditions. And it, Craig, if I may interject here, I definitely don't like to see a flagrant civil disobedience. That's not where it's at. We don't want that in a time of a pandemic. My home state is Michigan. They had people out there with rifles over their shoulder marching in the street saying, protect our constitutional rights. Boy, I just got to editorialize. It's not about that. It's about science and doing what's right and managing this as best we can. So pardon me for saying what we're not talking about. So I think what we are talking about is, let's go back to what you said, which I'm doing as well. What can we as individuals do? Okay. Mm-hmm. And I wear a face mask anytime I go inside anywhere, except for my own house. And I think that's perfectly reasonable protocol. I've been doing that in Asia for decades. And even if you think, well, heck, I'm young, this will be a very bad case of the flu for me. So what? Wear the colors, show support. Because as runners, as you know, we always want to be polite. We always want to show respect to other people. So I always wear a mask indoors. And then outdoors, tell me what you do, but we're probably doing the same thing here. If I'm going out for a hike, run, or a ride, I have the Ultra Band around my neck. And when I approach someone, I just pull it up over my nose and mouth, right? Mm-hmm. And like, why not? It's saying, we're in this together. You're wearing the flag. So I think that's perfectly appropriate. So I strongly recommend masks indoors. And I recommend the Ultra Band or the Boof headband when outdoors. And I want to pause here, Craig, if I may. Indoors and outdoors are very different. So I just got to say, I think the public recommendations on this have been wrong. I think you have to be very careful indoors because you have limited dispersion, and the droplets can be in the air and circulate around, and people can become infected. Outdoors, on the other hand, there's infinite dispersion. particularly with Breeze, and the volume, the person-to-volume ratio is very, very small. I think if one is not congregating in groups at close proximity, I think the possibility of infection is very low when outdoors. Just my opinion. And then I will couple that by saying that when you look at the infection rates and the particularly the fatality rates, if you are healthy, you're going to fare way better and you might not even show symptoms. So there's a particular enzyme that people who are obese have a very high enzymatic count of this, and that is clearly leading to morbidity and a very high infection rate. If you exercise, that very same enzyme goes down. And so I think what they could have done on March 14th is issue a stay outdoors order. It might have been more helpful than a stay inside order, because it is very healthy for the coronavirus as well as anything else to be outdoors in nature exercising.
Mm-hmm. So how do you apply that? I mean, that's the thing. As you were describing that, I thought, wow, if we're getting really, because I think the other thing that's interesting to note during this time is how quickly we as a society, for the most part, adapt to change. And so what used to seem really bizarre, when you would see someone traveling to the US from Asia and they were still wearing their mask, or you'd see images of Asian cultures wearing masks just in their daily life, what seemed odd about that like a month ago has now become fairly, you're fairly accustomed to it now in our society as a result of this. And so the behavior changes, I think it's just so interesting to see how quickly we adapt to new behaviors. And as you were describing the care that we take as runners when we're outside, I feel like we're, as a population, I feel like runners might be fairly adept at embracing and being able to maintain some level of security among other people at events. As you were saying that, I mean, think about when you walk into a store, a grocery store now, they've got the whole place lined out in terms of lanes of traffic and directional arrows and mats on the floor that tell you how far apart you should be from the next person in front or behind you. What if you applied that to a race scenario? So say you show up to a race morning, you're picking up your bib and you're separated by 6 feet from the person in line around you and behind you, and you're wearing a mask. And what if there's innovation or some sort of new mask that's developed where it's like, okay, we really prefer people to, if they're going to be racing amongst each other and near each other, what if you wear a mask, but someone has developed a mask that is a lot more breathable but still safe? And would we do that? Would we wear these and just get used to it and just have it be something that we adopt as a new normal?
Wow. Interesting, Craig. Wow. Interesting thoughts. So you're applying how restaurants are going to reopen to how races might. For example, restaurants right now in Boulder, they're considering adapting the parking spots outside. So you take over the street or the alley and put tables outside so people can maintain more distance, things like that, mm-hmm. which I think is a really good idea. Can that happen mm-hmm. with races? Wow, that's interesting. My guess is that things like group runs are going to come back. Now, say you got mm-hmm. 10 people, and if those 10 people are, you know, not sitting there hugging each other the whole time, I think they can get by with that. I think the law and the mandates will relax, allow them to do that. The Chicago Marathon, 35,000 right. of your closest friends, not seeing that, right?
I guess in my head, when I was unraveling that scenario, I was thinking about, you know, a smaller trail race or something where there's just more space and less people. But you're right. If it's something like a huge major marathon in a huge city, that could be a different scenario.
Well, I wouldn't sign up for it personally. And I think that, yeah. and that's one of the, if that's one of the ways I think that the public officials need to adopt their recommendations is to allow for individual responsibility and individual choice, because this affects everyone so different. So a blanket mandate is clumsy because it just doesn't apply to everyone. For example, those models, remember those models? Your friend, those models back in March it got five different emails every day of these complicated models. Those models were based on Wuhan, China. You know, they had certain assumptions. Mm-hmm. They didn't know what the factors to build the model, so they just took the factors out of Wuhan. And so if you're from Wyoming, this doesn't apply.
Right.
You know, the effects of social distancing, and they're showing how it helps out. If you live in Wyoming, this is just complete rubbish. Social distancing, you're doing that every day anyway, so forget it. So I think some individual choice has to happen. So me, I'm not going to go enter the Chicago Marathon, but other people, maybe they're comfortable with that. You see what I mean? So my guess is what the officials will do is start to permit events up to, say, 100, right? The ultra race, where you can just maintain some distance, spread it out, things like that, and try to make it work. But the big events, I don't see them coming back in 2020. But Craig, I do not know. Like everybody else, I have no bloody idea. I'm just talking here now.
But there are things like you said. I mean, there's data. We have a lot more data now. We have a lot more. We're more accustomed to what we're going through. And now for people to, I think people seem to be at least embracing this like collateral damage aspect, where it's like, well, at what point do we say not enough is enough, but just can we apply like some specificity to this? Can we say, you know, this population, please like use care, but you're able to do this. This population, you're more at risk. Please, we advise you to do this.
Right.
And I think when you said about the group runs coming back, I mean, they're back. Like people are out, people who aren't cohabitating, people who aren't in a romantic relationship, they're back out there. Like you see it every day now. And I think maybe what I'm kind of theorizing is that the official response to that kind of thing has, from what I've seen, been really left up to the individual. Like there's officials making recommendations, but in terms of it actually being enforced when people are breaking the quote unquote rules, I don't really see that happening. So I can kind of see this maybe flipping back from us as the populace, dictating back to the officials what we're okay with, because we're just starting to do it anyway.
Right.
And there's such a high level of personal responsibility in that, but I think, you know, you'd like to think everyone would take a lot of personal responsibility in this, and hopefully they will. But it seems like, from what I'm noticing, at least in terms of runners and people outside, it's kind of like they're already just taking advice, but then applying it to their own situation. So, you know, whether that means you're young and healthy and you feel confident that you can go be around your friend that you don't live with. You know, so I think maybe the officials may take a look at what we're doing and just say, okay, this is how people are responding. Can we put out something, a new set of guidelines or statements based on how people are actually out there?
You wish.
Yeah, I know. Maybe it's too optimistic, but
no, Craig, that's a heck of a point. And that goes back to what I said a few minutes ago, where I do not like flagrant civil disobedience. I do not like people protesting in the streets. That's just wrong in times of crisis. We got to all be patriots and take care of each other. While at the same time, ultra runners, athletes in general, kind of don't like BS. We don't like propaganda. So I would hope is that the public officials change their message and bring it in line with what we know now, with the science we know now, and update it to what we know now, so we can move out of this together in an orderly fashion rather than in a chaotic fashion.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want chaos, but like you said, people are already making their choice. The cat's out of the bag. So like you said, when was it? 2 weeks ago, I think City Council, Boulder City Council said, well, we're thinking of making it mandatory to do this, this, and that. And I was thinking about my contacting my friends on City Council and saying, yeah, don't do this. And I said, you know, why bother? It's done. Mm-hmm. It's over. The cat's out of the bag. Spring is here. You can't put it back in. The pandemic is terrible. It's going to have a terrible impact. But people are starting to realize that the hardships of this pandemic are not caused by the virus. The hardships are caused by our attempts to control the virus. That's different. Mm-hmm. And so the public health officials, in my opinion, need to adapt to the current scientific understanding and their current recommendations.
Yep. Yeah, and I think you and I have talked about this in the past too, just in terms of our own state. Like you gave the example of Oregon, and Colorado, I think, has done a really good job for the most part. Our governor has been handling it and speaking with the public really frequently. I think he has a public address like almost every other day. That's broadcast live on the radio and on Facebook and all these places where people can and should access it and hear what he's saying to just learn about what the latest data is and recommendations and that kind of thing. So I feel really fortunate that our state has been pretty good about how they've handled this, but I also feel kind of bad for other states where you've seen a lot of, you know, the surfers in Huntington Beach are freaking out, breaking the boards over other people's heads and just, you know, having all kinds of outrage over access to beaches. And, you know, Rocky Mountain National Park, for example, here has been closed, but I think it's due to reopen at the end of May. So in terms of recreation, I feel like our state has done a pretty good job in terms of balancing people's physical and emotional needs with, you know, recreation and being outside versus pandemonium, because the access has been so restricted.
Right. Totally the case. Governor Polis immediately shut down the ski areas, which blew my mind. That's like $1 billion dollars down the toilet. But that was a nexus of virus spread, because as people are coming in from Italy and internationally and then infecting basically our state from that little spot. Mm-hmm. But he kept the state parks open. He never closed a state park. And then he mandated the 6-foot distancing rule and then recommended face masks. So he's always nuanced his message. And then he had his stay-at-home order, and now it's a safer-at-home order, which is appropriate. You are safer at home. So good. That's I can appreciate that. Yeah, Governor Polis has done a good job. And now moving more forward, I like what you said about Le Tour. we'll see how this goes, because, you know, Prudhomme was talking about when the Tour de France was going to be held, and they're talking about this, this, and that. And then the next day, Emmanuel Macron, the Prime Minister of France, said no public events till August. And it's like, he just blew him out. You know, he didn't pay any attention. So in a way, I kind of like this, Craig. You know, the people running the big, giant, for-profit events were walking on water. And then the prime minister says, no, you're underwater. So I really feel for the restaurant owners and the wage earners who can't work. And I really feel for our race directors, but the big for-profit corporations, that's okay.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe in closing, I wanted to just have you speak to some of the data that we've gotten on fastestknowntime.com, because you and I talk about it. You, Peter, me, Jeff, we talk about it a lot just amongst ourselves. And we put it out a little bit, but let's assume that not everyone reads or hears the things we're saying. So can you talk about the level of FKT activity that's happened in the last month or so?
There's two ways to phrase this. One is we're buried. We're freaking out. Or I could be a little more objective than that and say our FKT submissions are 2.6 times higher than 2 months ago and just twice as high as they were a year ago. We're getting 14 FKTs per day and 7 new routes per day. And the other aspect of that, in case you're wondering, there are no house elves working for FKT.com, unfortunately. There is Peter Backlund and myself who manually enter everything. And it's like, wow. You know, on one hand, this is good work. We're really happy to do it. This is how it has to be done. But on the other hand, it's manual. And so there's a few ways to look at this. One is regarding races. Like I said, New York City Marathon might not be coming back this year. Hopefully, group runs already have. Hopefully, small trail races where there can be dispersion can come back. But FKTs are booming. And they're going to continue to boom as national parks start to open up. For example, the FKTs we've seen, Craig, are not coming in from Rocky Mountain National Park or Yosemite. No one's run rim to rim to rim in the Grand Canyon. It's all this fun little stuff in their backyard. They're finding cool new routes that haven't been done before and really working them. And secondly, they're coming in from Germany and Sweden. I'm almost fluent in German now. It's just crazy.
You've been processing so much information.
Right, right. Der Rüder Schnitzel Hagen da. See what I mean? I just got this down.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's been really fun and fascinating to observe from how people in our community of FKTers have responded to this. And and just to remind the listeners, we have a feature on the homepage called Tracking Now. And typically we reserve that feature for some of the bigger known premier route kind of attempts. We've had Appalachian Trail attempts on that in the last couple of years, but it's a really good place. We have one that was just completed. So it was on the Ridgeway National Trail in the UK. But we're tracking that one live so that you can just revisit this page every day to check in about how the FKT, it's usually multi-day attempts, how they're progressing.
This particular gentleman finished this morning, however.
Right. Yep. That was complete new FKT. But I would anticipate too, just as we get into nicer weather in this hemisphere, that we'll see some more really premier submissions coming in. So just a reminder to pay attention to that feature on our site.
And here's another heads up, if I may. We're going to ask for money. You know, I've been very shy, very, very shy. Because, you know, it's a love of the sport, obviously. We want to support FKTs. But we're going to start saying, could you send in a little money? Because, you know, the race fee is $150. And if you send in a route, you know, kick in 10. Because it takes, Peter or I, sometimes 15 minutes of just our manual labor to process this stuff. So why not just kick it in? Nobody is getting paid. I mean, it's just, that's not what's happening. We pay for server space and things like that. And so I'm just going to be a little bit more out there right now on this particular podcast and say, consider supporting us. Go on Patreon, do the monthly donation, go to the website, pull down the little tab that says support and kick in a little donation if you're liking this. It's not going to buy my new boat. It's just going to pay for server space and things like that. And it make us emotionally feel a little bit better about the amount of time we're spending every day processing this.
Yeah, good point. And people just will remind them of the URL, fastestknowntime.com/support, and you'll find all the methods by which you can show your support to us.
And next week's podcast, Craig, speaking of over there, we've got Europe coming up. Yeah, we got two. Yeah. This is good. So here's a quick heads up. We have two upcoming, I'm not sure what order they're going to be in, but we have a fellow from Belgium, Bart. I can't pronounce his last name. My German is fluent now, but my Flemish, not so much. And he's going to tell us about the scene over there, which is really different than how we do it here, right? So the German, Swedish, and Belgian scene is quite a bit different. So he's going to tell us all about that. And we have Fernanda Maciel, who's living in Chamonix from Brazil. And she's going to tell us what she's been doing. And she's just, wow. I'm intimidated. I'm going to be the host. I'm going to be starstruck. I'm going to have a difficult time conversing with her. So, Craig, maybe we got both out of handle, Fernanda, because this is going to be a good one.
Okay, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Call me in for backup if you need.
I'm gonna be so I'm gonna be tongue tied. I'm afraid this might happen.
Yep. Well, that all sounds good. That sounds like a great schedule. And as always, we publish on Friday morning, so stay tuned. And if you're listening to this, you're very likely subscribed, but if you're not, please do. And we'll talk with you next Friday.
Thanks, Craig. Good job.
Thanks, Buzz.